Imagine a world where people with diabetes or anyone living with a chronic disease receives the education, tools, and support they need to live successful lives despite their illness. Join me, Corinne Frugoni, in a conversation with Christelle Marchand-Aprigliano, who has lived with diabetes for 32 years and says, quote, "I want to help others navigate the personal roads they travel with chronic illnesses. Think of me as a GPS." Coming up next on Through the Eyes of Women. Stay tuned. Welcome to Through the Eyes of Women, a program featuring news and interviews concerning the lives and passions of women, local, national, and international. November is National Diabetes Awareness Month. For someone living with diabetes, every day requires an awareness of this disease that affects 1 out of 5 North Americans. Today, I'm lucky to be calling and talking with Christelle Marchand-Aprigliano, a passionate advocate for people diagnosed with diabetes and more generally for the human condition. I'm going to list just a few of her achievements. She's the CEO of the Diabetes Collective, a nonprofit corporation created to support and inspire the diabetes community through peer-to-peer support. She's the founder of the Diabetes Unconference. She's also the vice president of the Diabetes Patient Advocacy Coalition that seeks to keep diabetes issues in the forefront for policymakers in the United States. And she was appointed by the governor of Florida as a member of the Diabetes Advisory Council to advise the state on diabetes prevention, diagnosis, education, care, treatment, impact, and costs. Christelle is a member of the Patients Like Me team of advisors, helping to redefine the term partner in the healthcare equation. We'll talk about that later in the interview. And she writes a column, Been There, Done That, discussing how her perceptions of diabetes impact the world around her. And that's just the tip of the iceberg. Welcome, Christy, to our show.
It's a pleasure to be here this morning. Thank you so much for the opportunity to talk with you today.
Let's start at the beginning. What is diabetes and what are the different types? And how do you get diabetes?
Well, diabetes is like a lottery. Sometimes you hit the right number, or in this case, the wrong number, and you end up with one of the several types. There are more than just two types, but I'm going to just focus on those today. There's type 1 diabetes, which I have, and that affects approximately 5% of the population. It is an autoimmune disorder, and my pancreas and the pancreas of those individuals with type 1 decide that they're done giving insulin. And insulin is a hormone that brings the glucose that we eat to our cells to either be used as energy or stored as fat. And so if we don't have insulin in our body, we can actually become very sick and unfortunately don't last quite too long without insulin in our bodies. And so in my case, I take insulin through an insulin pump. Some people use daily injections to keep their blood sugars within a certain range, and that range is a healthy range, or it's supposed to be, to ensure that we don't have terrible lows. Low blood sugars can cause seizures, unconsciousness, even in certain cases death, or high blood sugars, which can be just as devastating and can cause something called ketoacidosis, which is almost like poisoning your own body and your own organs, and then in some cases coma and death. So that's the serious side of things. And the other serious type of diabetes is type 2 diabetes. This is different in the sense that it's a metabolic syndrome or metabolic disease. And in that case, 95% of the population who has type 2, some of who don't even know that they have the disease, their blood sugars are elevated because either they don't make enough insulin for what they need in their daily use, or that the insulin that they do produce has some problems getting through to the cells that need to receive them. So both type 1 and type 2 have the same sort of end goal. We all want to live as long as possible, as healthy as possible, with as few complications as possible. I got type 1 diabetes at 12 and a half. I actually diagnosed myself. I was sitting in a class, and I read an advertisement in Time magazine, from the American Diabetes Association, and it simply asked, do you have any of these symptoms? And when I realized that I had all of these symptoms, I turned to a classmate and said, I think I know what's wrong with me. And she just shook her head. She says, no, that's just for old people. So I took a simple blood test, and my doctors confirmed that I had type 1 diabetes, and that was 32 years ago.
What were your symptoms?
I had the classic symptoms for diabetes is an insatiable thirst, an almost ravenous appetite. I was exhausted all the time. I slept a lot. I had frequent urination. So there would be times I would be in class and teachers would just say, stop asking us if you need to go to the bathroom. Just go. Like, stop interrupting us. My eyesight started to get worse. And on top of it, I started to have dry, flaky skin. And no amount of moisturizer could help. And it was because I was dehydrated because I was drinking so much water and expelling it through my urine. So by the time that I was diagnosed, I had lost 12 pounds in a month. I did not look very healthy. And I was very scared at that point because I knew that something was terribly wrong. But I had no idea what diabetes really was. When they told me that I had diabetes, I said, okay, at least we know what it is. But I had no idea what the sort of precarious journey that an individual with diabetes takes every day in controlling their blood glucose levels.
Tell us about how you dealt with this illness as you were growing up.
I would love to say that I was a poster child for doing everything right, but I would be lying through my teeth. I had a difficult time during my teens and early 20s. The philosophy was at the time, it's only 5 years until a cure, so why should I bother taking care of myself, because there'll be a cure very soon. And then as the years went on, I felt like I was rebelling against what was being told to me. Diabetes can be restrictive, especially when it comes to diet and what you are supposed to be putting in your body. And I learned, unfortunately, how to manipulate my insulin dosage or withhold my insulin dosage so that I wouldn't gain any weight. So I had some very dangerous habits and some very poor, angry attitudes toward diabetes until my early 20s. It did damage. It did damage me psychologically, and it damaged me emotionally, and in some cases, it damaged me physically. I spent a lot of time with very high blood sugars, not feeling well, and it did impact a lot of my life at the time.
Tell me more about that.
I knew at a certain point that if I didn't change what I was doing, the way that I was treating my diabetes and my life, that I wouldn't live to see this cure that everybody was talking about. And I also wouldn't be successful in what I wanted to do, which was to live a normal life or a life as normal as somebody with a chronic illness can. And fortunately for me, I had some great doctors who saw through the little white lies, which were pretty big. And finally, my doctor said, how long have you been skipping shots? And at that point, I knew that the game was up and that I had to take responsibility for what I was doing to myself and the family and my friends around me, because I was probably not very pleasant to deal with when my blood sugars were out of control. So I was fortunate. I got some great psychosocial support, and through that realized that I had a lot to live for. And once my blood sugars got into range and I got on an insulin pump, my life dramatically changed for the better. Not every day is perfect, obviously, with diabetes. But with the technology, with the tools, and with the support that I get from the diabetes community and my family and friends around me, it makes a huge difference on how I view my life now with diabetes.
You've referred to diabetes as a constant daily drumbeat. What bothers you the most about living with diabetes?
I think that it impacts everything that I do. Even when I am not consciously thinking about it, it is in the back of my head, and it is. It's a very large drumbeat, because if I have to do something, I have to, before I actually take that action, think about the impact that diabetes will have. If I want to go for a long walk with friends, I have to make sure that my blood sugar is in range. I have to make sure that the amount of insulin that's in my body is the right amount for the amount of exercise that I'm going to do. Do I need to bring extra supplies, blood, you know, glucose strips? Do I need to bring some extra glucose in case my blood sugar does drop low while I'm exercising? It's simple things like waking up in the morning, and if I'm not feeling well, I have to decide whether it's just that I'm not feeling well, or is it because my blood sugar is too high or too low? Is it illness and stress? Is it the fact that I've had a long day and I haven't gotten enough sleep? All of this impacts my diabetes, my blood glucose levels. And so it's a constant drumbeat in the back of my head of making sure that diabetes, while not in the forefront of my life, is constantly there for me.
What do you think you learned about yourself with diabetes?
How incredibly resilient that people can be, and how small changes can make big impacts, not just on your own personal health, but in the group that you find yourself in. I call the diabetes online community my tribe. And once you find your tribe, it is a huge difference in your life when you know that at any point in time you could go online or pick up a phone and say, I need help. Somebody is going to be there for you. And my resiliency and my ability to bounce back has made my passion and my mission in life to be an advocate for my community, to be an advocate for people with chronic illnesses, and to help empower individuals. Diabetes, in a sense, has helped give me purpose to my life, where I didn't actually think that that would ever be the situation.
This is so much conjecture, but do you think you would be a different person without this illness?
Oh, absolutely. I'm not quite sure I would be any better. I certainly would be different. My life path would have definitely been different on the careers that I chose to follow, because diabetes does prevent individuals from going into certain careers. My travel would have been different because it's not easy to travel to some parts of the world with diabetes, especially if you're using insulin on a daily basis. So I can definitely say that it would have been a different life. I think that sometimes I am a little self-centered and selfish because I am trying to take care of myself, but I also believe that it's sort of like flying in an airplane, and when that oxygen mask's drop down out of the top, you have to put on your own mask first before you can help others. And so in a way, I am a little selfish. I take care of myself. I try to take care of my immediate family, and then I try to take care of the community. But it's because of the diabetes. I'm not quite sure I would be the same way if I didn't have it.
You're an advisor to the group Patients Like Me, which focuses on redefining the term partner in the healthcare equation. Tell us more about this group, and what do you mean by defining the term partner?
Patients Like Me is a wonderful community and a way to put your data about your particular condition to use for the greater good. By joining the community, and the community has over 250,000 people actively inputting their what we call patient-reported data, and they aggregate and anonymize the data, and it helps research push forward. Patients Like Me works with the FDA. They're working with collaborative registries. They're doing some amazing things in the community. The team of advisors are groups from all different disease states, and so we have some individuals with ALS, some individuals with Parkinson's disease, some individuals who have bipolar or major depressive disorder. We have different individuals with types of metastatic cancers. So for me coming in, I am steeped in the diabetes of my life and in my community. By working with these individuals, we have things that we can all share across disease conditions. And so by working together, we're looking at how individuals with chronic illnesses and their caregivers and their medical teams and insurance companies and anybody who touches us when it comes to healthcare, how do we partner with them to make our lives better, to make our communities' lives better, and hopefully change the way other individuals and other companies think about the patient, because at the end of it, the end goal is to make the patient healthier, and how does that play into what we define as being successful partnerships. So over the next year, the team and I will be working on how to redefine what we consider to be the best partners and how do we get there.
If you're just tuning in, this is Corinne Fregoni, and you're listening to Through the Eyes of Women. My guest today by phone from Las Vegas is Cristal Marchand-Aprigliano, and we've been discussing living with diabetes. You started the Diabetes Unconference. Tell us about this conference. What do you mean by unconference?
So one of the things about attending conferences is that there are not a lot of places where you can have a full patient conference. Most of the conferences in diabetes and other disease states focus on the research, and a lot of medical professionals attend these conferences, and some you do have activated patients who attend and get involved. But most of these conferences are experts who stand up at the front of the room, and they talk for about 45 minutes, and then they answer questions for about 5 or 10 minutes from individuals in the audience. What I found over the course of my time with diabetes is that some of the best advice and some of the ways to deal with day-to-day living, I learned from other patients. And I learned from them standing in hallways or sitting at a restaurant. And these have made huge impacts in my life, because I would have never found out about the benefits of going on a continuous glucose monitor, which helps me measure my blood glucose levels throughout the day. I probably never would have chosen the pumps that I use for insulin and the tips and tricks of daily living. So I had an opportunity about 2 years ago to brainstorm with some other wonderful advocates in the diabetes community. And they asked a question, and the question was, if you could do one thing in the community, what would it be? And out of nowhere, I spoke and said, I want to have a conference where individuals can talk about the things that they can't talk about with their healthcare providers and with their families or online, because these are sometimes very sensitive questions and sensitive topics. So I took a page from the book of the technology community, and they do have unconferences in the tech community. What happens is that individuals come to these without an agenda. The agenda is built at the conference. And individuals act as their own experts to help solve problems. So I translated that for the diabetes community. Everybody who comes has been impacted by diabetes. In March of 2015, we held our first Diabetes Unconference. We had about 90 participants, individuals with type 1 and type 2 diabetes, and we came together to discuss issues like depression and burnout. How do you age well with diabetes? What are the sensitive topics that, in intimacy, in relationships with family, how do you talk about complications? How do you disclose diabetes to your friends, to your family, to your employers? These are conversations that we can't normally have with our healthcare, because at those appointments, we have a very limited time, and most of that time is spent talking about lab results and treatment plans. This focused on day-to-day living and the psychosocial aspects of living with diabetes.
What are some of the comments you've heard from participants at the conference?
I had one individual tell me that it was a religious experience for him. And I had other individuals talk about the fact that they have had diabetes for several years, but it was the very first time that they had met other people with diabetes and was able to talk about issues openly. Individuals, a lot of them said that they made positive changes in their daily diabetes management or felt personally empowered to talk to their healthcare team about a particular issue that they were having, or in some cases even fire their current healthcare team because they weren't giving them the support that they needed. So it was a success on so many levels. A lot of friendships were developed here, and that is, for me, a huge goal that succeeded. Peer support is crucial in any disease, and helping to do the Diabetes Conference and helping to create these peer support relationships is essential for living well with diabetes or any chronic illness, is to create positive peer relationships.
You also go to the official American Diabetic Association conference annually. What's the difference between the UN conference and the ADA conference?
As I mentioned before, ADA is primarily a research conference. So all of the top endocrinologists and top research scientists will present their findings. What I find is that the focus is really not on the patient, the psychosocial aspects of living, you know, with diabetes, although there are a few. We have individuals who are steeped in the diabetes psychosocial aspects, but they are researchers, and so they present research about living with diabetes. It is, again, as I mentioned, these are the experts who stand up in the room. They don't often have time to sit, and a lot of the time, there aren't any patients in the room, and this becomes a let's see what we can apply in our own labs or our own clinics, but very much not about how can we help the patient day to day.
And how do you feel when you attend these conferences?
Overwhelmed in some cases, because recognizing these individuals work very, very hard to find cures, to find ways to help mitigate complications, and yet we're still so very far away from those days when I can say I used to have diabetes. So it is a little disheartening, but at the same time uplifting that we have so many people in the world who are trying to help people live well with diabetes.
Is there any new technology on the horizon that might make living with diabetes easier?
For individuals with type 1, absolutely. The technology that I use today, I use a continuous glucose monitor, as I mentioned before. I also use an insulin pump. But these are tools that the next step in the process is something called an artificial pancreas. And once these devices work together, it will tell my pump how much insulin I should need. There is one very interesting piece of technology that's coming on the horizon, and it's called the bionic pancreas. This uses two hormones. One is called glucagon, and the other is insulin. Glucagon is produced by your body to help raise glucose levels. And so using the factors that we create for what we believe is in-range blood glucose levels, that device will automatically give insulin or glucagon based on the levels and what I would need. This is a few years off. We are currently in phase two and heading into phase three clinical trials. And we're hoping to see that the FDA will approve this by 2018 or 2019. So while it is not a biological cure, it is very close to the cure that I see as being able to live without that constant drumbeat in the back of my head. And then on top of it, pharmaceutical companies are working in ways that I have never seen before. Multiple drugs put into one capsule. And these drugs for individuals with type 2, and in some cases type 1, help to keep those blood glucose levels in range and even better insulins, faster acting insulins. These are, we're at a very good point in diabetes and in terms of being able to have options. But of course, they're only good as if you can access them, and which is the reason why I co-founded the Diabetes Patient Advocacy Coalition, because I am a firm believer in that we need to have safe and quality when it comes to devices and the systems that we use to test our blood glucose levels, as well as being able to afford them and being able to access them. So devices are great, but if you can't afford them, they're useless.
There's always the political aspect of chronic illness. You're a mother and a wife. What do you tell your daughter about diabetes?
One of the interesting things about my daughter, she was, as we put it, she was hard fought, hard won. She was my miracle baby. It was nothing to do with diabetes, but we had some fertility issues. And as she has grown up, diabetes is simply just a part of her life in terms of when she hears a beep, she will tell my husband, or she'll tell me, your diabetes is high or your diabetes is low. She knows that when my blood sugar is low and when the beeps are a certain way, that mommy needs sugar or mommy, you need insulin. And in the car last week, we were driving, and my daughter simply asked, she's 4 and a half, will I get diabetes when I'm older? And I didn't have an answer for her, because there is a genetic component, and no one knows, in the case of type 1, who is going to get diabetes and type 1 and who doesn't. And so all I could answer was, I don't know, but if I have my way, no, you won't have diabetes when you're older like me. But I also try to be conscious of the fact that if I am living well and I'm living healthy, that I'm the best role model if she does end up having type 1 diabetes, and that we can conquer anything together.
Is there any book you'd recommend about living with diabetes?
Absolutely. There is a fantastic book by Dr. William Polonsky, Dr. Bill Polonsky, and it's called Diabetes Burnout. At every point in time, an individual with diabetes is going to come to a frustration level that they may not be able to deal with in an appropriate manner. For me, it was a number of years, and I still use this book as a resource when I'm having tough days. And this book talks about living with a chronic illness for a long time, and how do you get past the daily drudgery of something that has the potential of making devastating impacts in your life, and then how do you take control of it, and how do you manage living well? And that book changed my life and changed the way that I deal with my diabetes. So I highly recommend it to anybody who is struggling, or even a caregiver, somebody who loves somebody with diabetes, because I also believe that they need support as well. That's an interesting thing about the Diabetes on Conference this year, is that we are bringing caregivers. We are bringing spouses and significant others and parents and children, adult children, to the event to have their own psychosocial conference, because they need that psychosocial support as well. And they need to be able to talk about the things that they can't even talk about with their own person with diabetes. So it's important, because diabetes impacts families in ways that it's not just the individual with diabetes, it's the entire family.
The entire human community is lucky to have you so committed to educating all of us about living with diabetes and chronic illnesses. Thank you, Christelle.
Thank you so much, Corinne. I really appreciate it, having the opportunity to share with you today.
You've been listening to Through the Eyes of Women. I'm your host, Corinne Fregoni. My guest today was Christelle Marchand-Apugliano, and we were discussing living with diabetes. If you want more information about living with this chronic condition, you can go to Christelle's blog, theperfectd.com. Make sure you type in the word the. Through the Eyes of Women is a collaborative effort produced for KHSU, located at Humboldt State University. Thanks to today's engineer and editor, Jesse Eden. To listen to the show again in the next 2 weeks, go to khsu.org. You can also listen to the show anytime on Through the Eyes of Women's permanent blog archives, khsuwomen.com. Join us again next Monday at 1:30 right here on KHSU.